Please try to come to class on time. It's already 4 minutes. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, we were talking about the Lord's internal energy. Now we'll talk about how she appears as the Lord's consort in text 99, Anuchet 99. This Anuchet has 5 paragraphs. Ataivam bhut ananta vritika ya swarupa shaktihi sa tviha bhagavad vam amsha vartini murtimati lakshmir evedi. So the internal energy, who in this way has countless functions, is the same Lakshmi personally present in this world on the left hand side of the Lord. Iti aha, as it is stated, anapayini bhagavati shriksakshadatmano hare. The goddess of fortune Shri, the counterpart of the Supreme Lord Hari, never leaves the side of him who is indeed her very self. Let's see. Where is this from? Bhagavatam, where? 12:11:20, okay, got it. Okay, Tika Cha. Anapayini Harek Shaktihi. The commentary on this, and that's Sridhar Swami's commentary on this verse, says, she is inseparable as the energy of Hari. Tatra hetuhu sakshat atmanaha swaswarupasya chidrupatvat tasyas tadabedat ityartaha iti esha. Hare Krishna. The reason for this is stated, that he is directly her very self, sakshat atma. So he's being called sakshat atma. I'm taking sakshat atma as a compound, it's a mantra. He's the direct atma. Well, here in this context, the idea is he is her self, her soul. The goddess of fortune, she is inseparable as the energy of Hari. The reason for this is stated that he is directly her very self, or the essence of her identity. And thus, because he is pure spirit, her status is also the same. That's what Sridhar Swami has to say. Atra sakshad shabdena vilajyamanaya yasya statum iksha pate muya ityadi ukta maya neti dvanitam. Hear the word directly. He's directly her soul. This word suggests that she is not the maya described in such statements as the illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position. Or cannot take precedence means she can't, she's ashamed to stand in front of him. But Lakshmi is not standing in front of him, but standing on his left side. She's not hiding in the back. So this is not Maya. Lakshmi is somebody different. Here's the commentary. I think this is not too complicated, this part. The Supreme Lord Vishnu displays his beautiful form, and his consort Lakshmi displays hers, both by the power of her partial expansion called Murti. In formal public events, a wife should stand on her husband's left side. Not that she has to stand on his left side all day, every day, but when it's a formal occasion, that's where she stands. Lakshmi is seen in that pose with Vishnu in Vaikuntha, and also in their descents to the material world. Of course, when they are at home, outside the public spotlight, she can move from that formal position for doing her services. But she is anapayina, always serving him in all situations. Many wives stay at home when their husbands travel. But Lakshmi joins Vishnu in all his avatars. Lord Vishnu takes the forms of many species of life, and she always assumes corresponding forms. It's recommended in the Dharma Shastra, when you go traveling, don't take your wife with you. Because you're asking, it just makes things complicated. Better you leave your wife at home. It's a recommendation of the Dharma Shastra. But Vishnu doesn't follow that rule. He takes Lakshmi with him wherever he goes. Lord Vishnu is the ultimate self of all selves, and his own wife is no exception. So he's the ultimate self of all selves, and he's also her ultimate self. In other words, he includes male and female within himself, but prefers to have these two natures of his appear separately to allow loving reciprocations. The Supreme Lord is directly the very self of his internal energy, and indirectly the very self of her removed expansion, the material energy. Okay, comments? Yes, sir.
Just a small comment. I remember once it was said that when a husband goes to the pilgrimage, he has to take his wife along with him to some holy place. Is it according to Dharma Shastras, or it's... when husband goes to some pilgrimage, he has to take his wife along with him?
If he goes on a pilgrimage, he should take his wife?
That's what was said, so therefore I'm just amazing. Maybe you can confirm or...
Are you sure about this?
It was said like this.
Okay. Well, then a pilgrimage, if it says that, then a pilgrimage is considered an exception. Because there is an injunction that when you go on business trips or pleasure trips, anyway, recommended that, you know, it makes things easier if you go by yourself. That's not that anyone who goes takes his family with him is condemned. It's just a recommendation. And then pilgrimages may be something different, a special situation.
Okay. Prabhu, we don't see Vishnu when he takes forms like Matsya and Kurma, Varaha, Lakshmi taking the corresponding forms.
Lakshmi always comes with Vishnu in all his avatars. We may not see her. She may not make a public appearance. She may be hidden, or she just may be staying inside and nobody sees her, but she's there. Yes?
There is one instance when Vamanadev comes, he said that Lakshmi was there, but Vamanadev is a brahmachari.
He later got married.
Yeah, so they said that when Vamanadev became a brahmachari, he was covering his chest with a deer skin because Lakshmi was residing.
Lakshmi was residing, sorry,
hiding? In the chest of Vamanadev, so some kind of comment.
Okay.
Just a comment to quote, she is always there. I have a question. Is it some difference that if you see the temples of Lakshmi Narayan, Lakshmi always stays on the wife's side. And Srimati Radharani, in our temples, we see she stands on the other side.
Yes.
Is there any reason for it?
Well, she's taking a more prominent position. Only Radharani does that. Shri Krishna Akarshani Chasa. The power that Radharani has controls Krishna. So she takes the dominant side, the right side. Okay. Anything else? Yes, Tota Gopinath.
Just a short comment. Prabhupada says a husband takes his wife to the forest when he takes vanapras.
He can, he doesn't have to.
Okay.
The option is, this is described by Narada Muni in the 7th canto, that and in the Dharma chapters. The option is there. You can go with your wife or without her. So sometimes the vanapras is continue wearing white, and sometimes they put on saffron. If they leave their wife behind, then they may put on saffron.
I didn't understand that point. Radharani stands on right hand side or?
Right.
But we see it's always Krishna's left hand side.
I'm sorry?
She's on the Krishna's left hand side always.
Sorry, hold on. Do I have it backwards?
Yeah, there.
No, let's fix it. Well, it says Lakshmi's on the Vamamsha. That's the left side. From our point, it looks like right, left to us, but from Krishna's standing, if you're Krishna standing there, she's on your right side. She's on his right side. We're looking from the front, it looks opposite. But actually, she's on his right side. Right? I'm not good at these spatial, I get confused about visual, spatial things, yeah? Okay, wait. Radharani's on this side. This side, that looks like the left side to us, but from Krishna's point of view, it's his right side. Right? Correct? She's not in the right place in Krishna's point of view? Oh. Wait a minute. You're saying that Krishna Balaram temple, Radharani is standing on, not on the same side that she stands in all the other temples? It's actually on his left side. Okay, why is Jiva Goswami saying here that Lakshmi is on Narayan's left side? Vama is left, definitely. Okay, Lakshmi is actually on Vishnu's right side?
But in all the situation, Lakshmi stands opposite
side of? Right, now which side, which is which? Which one's right, which one's left? Look at Lakshmi Narayan. Which side is Lakshmi standing on?
On the left side of Krishna, the right side of Narayan.
She's actually on the right side of Narayan. That is from Narayan's point of view,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like here's Narayan. Lakshmi would be over here. That's the right side.
That's what Dhriya Prabandham also quotes. Dhriya Prabandham also quotes Lakshmi's place on the right side.
Okay, hold on a second. 632. Vamamsha, there's a footnote, there's an alternate reading that says Damamsha, but that doesn't help. Okay, I'll just make a note of this. Shouldn't that be the right side? We're talking about Lakshmi here. Okay, maybe there's something wrong with the text here, saying that Lakshmi is on the Vamamsha. Bhagavad Vamamsha Vartini, standing on his left side, is what the text says. Maybe that's copied out of the manuscript wrong or something.
Every temple of Lakshmi Narayana, I didn't see it here, but everywhere we have seen, Lakshmi always stays on the right side of Narayana.
On the
right side of.
Okay, and Srimati Radharani is always on the left side of Krishna.
In all his contemplations.
Okay. So there's something wrong with the text here. I'll just have to look at the different editions of the book and see why I have Vamamsha here. Okay. Because we're talking about Lakshmi.
This paragraph.
Okay. Anything else about this paragraph? That question we'll have to research. Yes.
In the text it is said that she's inseparable as the energy of Hari because he is directly her very self, the essence of her identity. But about Maya, because Krishna is also the self of everyone and he's also her self. So
yeah,
why do we discriminate between Maya?
Well, we discriminate not in the ontological sense. Everything is expanded from Krishna. But he has his direct expansions and then the expansions of the expansions. The expansions further expand. He expands into Srimati Radharani. She expands, So we can say that her expansions are not directly coming from Krishna. They're coming from her. So Lakshmi is being counted here as direct. But Lakshmi's expansion, material Maya, is considered an indirect expansion because it's her expands. She expands from the Lord. And then Maya expands from her.
Is it because Maya is called Bina Prakriti, like a separated energy, Bina Prakriti, separated energy of the Lord, like she's in the distance from him, like...
Because, really the good reason is that she has a more distant relationship. It's not just the ontological, connection of the elements, the tattvas, but on the level of bhava. On the level of personal relationship, Lakshmi has a much more intimate relationship with the Supreme Lord than material Maya has. Therefore, Maya is indirect, especially in the terms of relationship.
And therefore, to say like the illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position.
Right, but Lakshmi does take precedence. She stands right by her husband.
Always with Krishna.
Yeah, he's there. Whenever he's officially, there's any official snapshot of Vishnu, Lakshmi's there in the picture. So that's taking precedence. She's always in the pictures. Whereas Maya won't be there in the picture. She'll be hiding somewhere.
Yes. Is Krishna's non-difference with Srimati Radharani and Narayan's non-difference with Lakshmi both same or like?
Well, we could say maybe not exactly the same. The relationship is different. The relationship that Krishna has with Srimati Radharani is most intimate, whereas the relationship between Lakshmi and Narayan is less intimate. Okay? So there's some difference in relationship. And Srimati Radharani expands directly from Krishna as his very first energy expansion. So she has a precedence that Lakshmi doesn't. Lakshmi comes later on. So in both those ways, it's not exactly the same. Therefore, there is some higher benefit in worshipping Radha Krishna. There's something different. Okay. All right. Something else? We move to the next paragraph. Okay. Some references to support the idea that she is inseparable from him. Some scriptural evidence. Tatra apayetvam atatra anapayetvam Yata Shri Hayashirsha Pantaratri. Specifically, her being inseparable is described in Shri Hayashirsha Pantaratri. Paramatma Harir Devas Tachaktir Shriir Ihodita Shriir Devi Prakriti Prokta Keshavak Purushat Smitaha na Vishnuna vina devi na harik padmajam vina iti. The Supreme Soul is Lord Hari, and his energy is called Shri in this world. The goddess Shri is also called Prakriti. And Keshava is known from scripture as the Purusha. The goddess is never without Vishnu, and Hari is never without her, Padmaja. And also Sri Vishnu Purani. Also in the Vishnu Purana, there's a statement. Nityaiva sa jagannmata Vishnokshriir anapayini Yata sorvo gato Vishnus tatai veyam dvijotama. Vishnu Purana says, she, the inseparable Shri of Vishnu, is the eternal mother of the universe. As Vishnu is present everywhere, so is she, O best of Brahmins. Vishnu is everywhere, he's all-pervading, so Lakshmi also has to be all-pervading. Anyatra, tatra anyatra, and somewhere else. Well, else, no, I'm sorry, somewhere else in the same Vishnu Purana. I think we have the reference for it. Yeah, that's 692. Or, I'm sorry, 679. Yeah, Vishnu Purana. These are both from the first canto of the Vishnu Purana. So in the ninth chapter of the Vishnu Purana, it is said, Evam yata jagat swami deva devo janardanaha avataram karoti eva tatashvis tat sahayini. Thus, in the same way, as Janardana, the master of the universe, the Lord of Lords, descends to this world, so does his helpmate, Shri. And the commentary, Goddess Lakshmi has the names Prakriti and Padmaja, even as the original consort of Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha. So even in Vaikuntha, she's called Prakriti. As the Purana, this Purana was referring to her by the name Prakriti. She is the Lord's transcendental Prakriti. And she descends along with his avatar Mahavishnu in the form of the material Prakriti. Uh-oh, I'm saying that the consort of Mahavishnu is material Prakriti. I think that's a mistake. Since I'm saying it, I have to doubt it. It doesn't sound right. Lakshmi comes and accompanies him in his leelas. That's not the material Lakshmi. Material Lakshmi is a different expansion. Okay, I may just cross out that section, but I'll try to figure out why I said that. Maybe there's some reason. She is famous as Padmaja, the goddess born from a lotus, even before she comes into the material world to enact the pastime of that birth. For taking various births and for killing enemies, Vishnu and his consort both need to come down to the world of matter. Because in their spiritual abode, there is no birth and death. I think we did some research last week about Lakshmi appearing from the milk ocean and then taking Lord Vishnu as her husband. And I think we verified that that is the original spiritual Lakshmi, not the material Lakshmi, right? Didn't we check this? Okay, so that's not the material Lakshmi that appears as the consort of the Lord in his avatars. Okay. So that's just a mistake. I'll just cross out those last words, in the form of the material Prakriti. No great loss in taking it out. Okay. any comments? Sarva Gopi.
I remember also when we had the discussion about material and spiritual Lakshmi, in one of the verses she was referred to something like Brahmanda Janini, one who is Brahmanda Janini, one who is the mother of all of different Brahmandas. So does it refer to material Lakshmi in this case or spiritual? Because in this verse also she's called as the mother of the world.
Well, that term mother of the universe may be used somewhat figuratively. Just like Mother Yashoda is called that also. Mother Shachi is called that. By being Krishna's mother, then you're entitled to be called mother of the universe because he's the source of the universe. If you're his mother, then you must be the mother of the universe, but not directly. So the spiritual one, you can also be called mother of the universe because her expansion is actually the mother of the universe. Okay, so it's sort of removed. It's a Lakshana Vritti. She's not directly, but because her expansion is the mother of the universe, she gets to be called mother of the universe.
Especially when we speak about the mother of the universe, we mean Durga Devi or Ma. Right?
Yeah, it's material Maya. She's actually the mother of the universe. But Maya, that Maya is an expansion of the spiritual Lakshmi. Therefore, the spiritual Lakshmi can also be called mother of the universe. Indirectly, she's actually the grandmother. Because from her comes Mahamaya, and then from Mahamaya, from material property, comes the universe. Yes, sir?
Here it's mentioned that the Padmaja, born of the lotus flower,
yes.
Even in the spiritual world, she's called...
She has that name, even though she may not literally do it in the spiritual world, take birth out of a lotus, but she has that name. Before she does it. Krishna has many names describing pastimes, and those names are used even before he performs the pastimes. They're eternal. The names are eternal, the pastimes are eternal. So there may be somewhere in Vaikuntha there's a pastime where we're taking birth somehow from the lotus, but actually, usually the Lord doesn't and his consort don't have a Janma Leela in the spiritual world, usually. Maybe there's something enacted, just so she can become famous as Padmaja. There's some arrangement for her to appear to take birth from the lotus, maybe. Or it's just her name. Yes?
In the Shri Sampradaya, they have two divisions. One of the major point of disagreement for them is also this particular point of whether considering Lakshmi in the Ishwara Goshti or in a Jiva Goshti. They have different opinions.
They're trying to figure out, they're in conflict over which category she fits in, which tattva.
Yeah.
We would term that Vishnu tattva or Jiva tattva. I think that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, the reason they give is one argument, one group says that if she is taken in the category of Ishwara Goshti, then...
Is it word Goshti or Koshti?
Goshti means in that category, Vishnu category.
Is the Sanskrit word actually Koshti with a ka? Koshti means like a box or a category. Goshti is a company, like a group of people. Anyway, it could be either word,
I'm not pronouncing it properly.
In Tamil, you might, the two would be mixed up.
Yeah. So, they say that if she is also in the same category, then the philosophy won't be Vishishta Advaita, it will become Vishishta Dvaita. Two Brahman will be there. So, we cannot take her in the same category. And they say that certain qualities like Vibhutva and creation, these things are only meant for Narayan. Lakshmi is only the mediator between Jivas and Krishna, Narayan.
How we answer that in our Sampradaya is we understand there is a separate category. This is Shakti Tattva.
Mm.
Vishnu Tattva, Jiva Tattva, and then Shakti Tattva is something separate. Neither of them, a different category.
Mm.
She's infinite, not finite. She's perfect, all powerful, But she's not the predominator. She's the predominated, not the predominator. But I don't think that that's just something that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas made up. I think you'll find that in the Pancharatras and other scriptures. The designation of Shri Tattva, or Shakti Tattva. Lord Chaitanya, I think, uses the term in his instructions to Sanatana Goswami. Maybe he doesn't. Shakti Tattva. Anyway, I think the Sri Vaishnavas must also recognize it, because I think it's found in various scriptures, the idea of Shakti Tattva. Maybe they don't? Maybe they don't use that term?
I didn't find them.
Okay.
At least Baldev Vidyabhushan also speaks about, Baldev Vidyabhushan also says, somewhere he says, Lakshmi is non-different from Narayan. Same thing. Like what you're mentioning here.
Okay, who takes the point that Lakshmi belongs to the Vishnu Koti?
There are two sects in Sri Vaishnavas called South and North. The North category accepts that.
So the Tengalized.
Vadagalized.
Those are the Northerners.
North, yeah.
They say that Lakshmi is in the Vishnu category.
Yeah. It can be said non-different can be given to it.
Okay.
Like that. And another thing is that when we say this non-difference, it also includes difference.
Yes.
As a Shakti and Shaktiman.
Yes. Definitely. Especially since she's not non-different in the same way that the Vishnu Tattvas are. The Vishnu Tattvas are exactly the same person. But Shakti is something special. It's female. Vishnu is always male. There's more difference between Vishnu and Lakshmi than between Vishnu and Ananta, first Vishnu Tattva expansion. Between one Narayan and another, there's less difference than there is between Narayan and Vishnu and Lakshmi. Different degrees of difference. Yes.
When he takes a female form, is he still a male?
Like what is said, what Prabhupada explains, is that no, Vishnu never takes a female form. The Mohini Murti is a disguise. He's dressed like a female. But Vishnu never actually becomes female. It's just a disguise. Okay. Now, anything else in this paragraph? Well, okay. We can move on. We can do another one. This is paragraph 3. Now, another thing about her is that she's Chidrupa. She's purely spiritual. And she has a form. And that form is purely spiritual. Chidrupa tuam api skande. Skande. That the goddess Lakshmi is pure spirit is also described in the Skanda Purana. Aparam tvaksharam yasa prakritir jadarupika shripara prakriti prokta chetana vishnu samshraya tam aksharam param prahu paratak param aksharam harir evakti laguno harir evakti lagunopya akshara trayam iritam. The lesser infallible is material nature. There are two infallibles. There's the greater infallible and the lesser infallible. The lesser infallible is material nature. Shri is called the superior nature, pure consciousness, always under the shelter of Vishnu. Authorities identify her as the superior infallible, and the supreme infallible is Hari. Thus three infallibles are named. The jivas are fallible, but Shakti Tattva is not fallible. And Vishnu is not fallible. And even the material energy is not fallible. It's not like a jiva. Let me read the commentary. In reference to differences among both finite and infinite living entities. Many of the Upanishads discuss the metaphysical contrast of kshara and akshara, or the fallible and the infallible. In the Gita Upanishad, Sri Krishna posited this distinction in simple terms. Dvavimau purushau loke kshadas chakshara evacha kshara sarvani bhutani bhutasto kshara uchyate. Somebody asked me just 2 days ago about this verse. Doesn't it say that some living entities are infallible? And I was trying to argue, no, all living entities can fall down. And that one interpretation of this verse is that the akshara is not the living entity, but Lakshmi. So let's see the translation here. In this world, there are two kinds of living entities, beings, the fallible and the infallible. Most creatures are fallible, but a soul who remains always fixed in one and the same identity is infallible. Well, let's see what we say here. The Skanda Purana text cited here distinguishes three kinds of infallible beings. Okay, what kind of three kinds of infallible beings do we have here? Liberated jivas are infallible in fact, but still fallible in principle, because as finite souls, they always have the potential to fall. So they could fall, even if they never do, they still have to be called fallible, because they can fall. Not that they have fallen or they will fall, but they could fall, so therefore they're fallible. They have a potential for falling. So they're not infallible. Even when they never exercise that potential, still they're called fallible. Analyzing from this view, of course you could argue, oh, that's not fair. You know, let's call them infallible because they never fall. But from this viewpoint, the jivas don't count, even the liberated jivas don't count as infallible. Analyzing from this viewpoint, this passage of Skanda Purana does not include mukta jivas among the akshadas. It doesn't. You know, the Skanda Purana was talking about the prakriti, material prakriti, and the goddess Shri, consort of Narayan, and then Narayan himself. Those are the three aksharas that the Skanda Purana recognizes, not the liberated jivas. Okay, Skanda Purana, this passage of Skanda Purana does not include mukta jivas among the aksharas, although Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan does include them in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita 15.16. That very same verse, Dvayimau Purusho Loke. So there's two different ways of looking at it. Baladeva Dibhushan includes the Mukta Jivas among the infallible. But another way of looking at it, as represented by the statement of Skanda Purana, is to not count them as infallible. Discounting the liberated Jivas, the infallible living beings listed from lower to higher are material nature, the spiritual nature from whom material nature expands, and third, the personality of Godhead, who is the source of both. Material nature is infallible in her devotion to her Lord, but finite souls who try to exploit her for themselves are doomed to become fallible. So, she's infallible, but anyone who tries to mess with her will become fallible. Anyone who tries to contact her for enjoyment will become fallible, will fail. Faithful jivas who take shelter of the Supreme Lord's spiritual nature are kept infallible by her grace, by the grace of material nature. Liberated jivas and prakriti in her material and spiritual forms are infallible dependently. And the Supreme Lord alone is infallible independently. This is interesting. Now we're making another distinction of two different kinds of being infallible in two different ways. And only the Supreme Lord, and nobody else, not even Lakshmi, is independently infallible. Okay. Any comments on that?
What does it mean to be independently infallible?
Well, what it means to be dependently fallible is that you're only fallible by the mercy of somebody else. Like, I'm well-to-do and comfortable because somebody rich is giving me money. I don't have any power to make money on my own. I don't have any of my own money, but someone is supporting me. So I'm dependently well-to-do. If I was independently well-to-do, I'm not using somebody else's money, but I have my own money. So dependently infallible means I'll never fall, I can't fall, because I'm being protected by somebody. But the Supreme Lord doesn't need anybody else's protection to be infallible.
So in this infallible category or a fallible category of the jivas, like the other day we are discussing about how we understand in the spiritual world who are in the fallible category and who are in the infallible category.
We have to accept that there are two different ways of using the term. Okay, there are two different ways to see it. You know, what do you mean by fallible? What who are you allowed to be designated by that word? You can understand the word slightly differently. Does it mean you never fall, or does it mean you have no potential? You can't even fall if you want to. So it depends whether you take one meaning or the other. If you take the meaning that you never fall, even though you theoretically could, then the liberated jivas are infallible. And that's Baladeva's
way of reading it.
The other way of reading it is be more strict and say, no, the jivas are infallible no matter what they are, no matter what how they surrender, they're still potentially fallible. Otherwise, they're not jivas. So depending on which way you read it, you get a different answer. It's just because you're redefining the word. You're understanding the word in two different senses. It doesn't change the facts. It just changes the way you use the word, fallible. You know, if you ask who's fallible, I have to ask, what do you mean by fallible?
So probably somebody asked for an extension of this, that if you say in a technical term that jivas are fallible, even in the spiritual world,
or well, that means that jiva could, anybody could fall from the spiritual world.
Yeah.
That could, might, theoretically.
Yeah, theoretically. But are we going to include in this category who in the spiritual world, like acharyas?
I'm sorry?
I mean, this acharyas also included in this category?
Well, you should never think of your own guru as fallen, but any jiva could be sent from the spiritual world. We see, you know, even eternal associates get cursed and come down to the material world. Temporarily, at least, they come down. Yes?
So does it mean that like we have three categories? We have Vishnu Tattva, then we have Shakti Tattva, and we have Jiva Tattva. And we have also material
right.
Nature.
I think that's a Gaudiya Vaishnava ontology. We can add a fourth, Shiva Tattva, to that.
Yeah, Shiva Tattva also, yes.
Yeah, so, and pretty much every living being falls into those four categories. The only thing you have left over is non-living matter. Maybe that's the fifth category, is the dead matter.
So when we speak about Mukta Jivas, like those who are Akshara,
but they're still jivas. They're in the jiva category.
Yeah, yes. So we can, even Srila Prabhupada with Pushna in his commentary, he could mean, maybe I'm not sure, but I'm just guessing. He could mean that there are two kinds of mukta jivas. Like we know that there are shakti tattvas, like which are manifestations.
Shakti tattva is not a jiva. So shakti tattva is mukta, but it's not a mukta jiva. It's a mukta shakti.
Yeah. But in this case, it was said that Dva imam purusha loke, akshara, akshara, evacha. So purusha can mean not only to jiva but to any
yeah, you can take purusha just to mean living being and yeah, you can include being. The shaktis yeah. as in the broader then you have to argue what do you mean by purusha yeah. you might someone may interpret I haven't seen such an interpretation but someone may exclude the shaktis because they're not purushas but we don't mean male we just mean living being that's the way we're taking it
yeah. because we can take like mukta jivas or mukta eternally liberated living entities in the spiritual world, they can belong to two categories. First one is Shakti Tattvas, then those who cannot even potentially fall down because they are manifestation of the spiritual energy.
Well, there are two different kinds of liberated persons in the spiritual world, but they're not, no, but that's not that one person belongs to both categories. Right? I mean, you're not going to... nobody is both a jiva and a shakti at the same time. Nobody's both.
No.
Right?
It's either shakti tattva or jiva tattva.
Yeah, they're exclusive categories. Yeah. Nobody belongs to both categories of shakti and jiva. They're exclusive.
They belong to one or the other.
Yeah.
They might like look like jivas, but actually
yeah, but mukti,
they are not.
But by being mukti, you don't become shakti. Jivas are finite, infinitesimal. Shaktis are infinite. They don't, you know, they're literally infinite. They occupy all time and space. They don't belong to limited time and space. Mm-hmm. They're not limited in size or in potency or in perfection. All the shaktis, including material shaktis. So a jiva doesn't become a shakti, and nobody can be both a jiva and a shakti. You're one or the other.
So we can take the like shakti, those who are shakti tattvas, but still that they look like jivas, they are unfallible because they cannot fall down even in principle, even potentially.
What kind of person are you talking about? Like for example?
Like Shrimati Radharani or Gopis.
Well, she's a shakti, she's not a jiva. Nobody should be calling her a jiva.
Or for example, Gopis like Lalita, Shankar Devi.
Some people are calling Lakshmi a jiva, but we don't agree with that. There's no way she's a jiva. We have to let her have her own category, shakti tattva.
Yeah. So, like this, we have gopis, for example, or we have Yashoda Maya, Nanda Maharaj, who are in this category.
Okay, that we're discussing. Yeah. I hope that we can just be satisfied that they're jivas.
I thought something like that. Anyway, yeah. I'll show you what they're on.
Prabhupada says in the purport they're not ordinary jivas. Mm-hmm. But he didn't say they're not jivas, he said they're not ordinary jivas.
Yeah. So in this way, they cannot fall down even potentially. But then
who can't fall down even potentially?
Potentially, what they mean, they might come by the order of the Supreme Lord, like when Krishna comes.
But who are you talking about?
Gopis, for example.
Which gopis? The ones that are shaktis or the ones that are jivas?
Shaktis.
Yeah, the ones that are jivas, I would stand by the opinion that they, as a jiva, they have the potential to fall.
Yeah.
Liberated associates won't do that, but they could. If they ever decided, I've had enough being surrendered, I want to fall down, they could do it.
Yeah.
If they ever, it's not that they'll ever do that, but they could.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to say, that there are like two categories and they are mixed up in the spiritual world.
Yes.
Shakti tattvas and jiva tattvas. And out of them, shakti tattvas, they cannot fall down even potentially, but jiva tattvas, they can potentially fall down.
Right. I would like to say that a jiva always has the potential to fall. That's what it means to be marginal. Some of my god brothers don't like to agree with that. That the liberated jivas can fall. Yeah. Not everybody agrees with that opinion, but I still want to stand by it. That to be a jiva means that you have a potential to fall.
There are certain associates that
we have a problem with the noise, so hold the microphone close.
Oh. There are certain associates that are described that they are expansions of Krishna.
That could be taken literally, or they could just be empowered jivas. Or they could be Vishnu Tattva, it depends.
Okay. So if there are like Shakti Vesh avatar.
Yeah. Right. There may be a Shakti Vesh jiva. That's a little confusing too, because some Shakti Avesha avatars are Vishnu Tattva.
Yeah, like Kapila.
Yeah. Right. So, but, yeah, so if it says that one of Krishna's cowherd boys is his expansion, that might be literal. He might be Vishnutantra. But who is that? What cowherd boy besides Balaram is actually Vishnutantra? Yeah, I don't know if there are any.
But living entities such as Mother Yashoda, she is a Jiva Tattva. But
I hope you didn't find disproof of that. Okay, she's a Jiva Tattva. Yes.
Okay, so she's considered Jiva. We're putting.
She's not a Jiva. Anyway, I'm going to discuss this after class. Sorry, we've done some research, but we can talk about that after class. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say then. Persons like this, liberated persons who are eternal associates of Krishna,
yes,
for the sake, they're still considered fallible because they have the potential, even though they don't choose it.
Yeah, like that.
Okay.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
Rohit, as you say that, you want to say that the jivas on the category of fallible in the spiritual world,
Jivas are not in the category of infallible, right?
They are in the category of fallible.
Right. If we take it the way that the Skanda Purana presents it,
yeah,
instead of the way that Baladev presents it in his Gita commentary,
yeah,
because he likes to let some of the jivas be infallible.
Yeah. And Prabhupada also translates the verse in same verse.
Where?
The 15.16. There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible.
But he just says living beings. He doesn't specify jivas in the translation.
No, and then the paragraph, the translation continues. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. That is the...
You mean in the purport?
Translation of Dvavimo Purushav Loke Kshara Evacha.
That's Prabhupada's translation?
Yeah.
Yes.
So the translation I give here is not the same?
No.
Because Prabhupada, it looks like Prabhupada's following Baladev Vidyabhushan.
Yeah, yeah.
Which he does in most of the Gita.
Yeah.
He follows Baladev Vidyabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti, not only Baladev. Yeah. But, so that's why I couldn't just use Prabhupada's translation here.
Yeah.
What does he say exactly?
There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible.
Okay. One reason why I didn't repeat that, because that sort of Prabhupada is reading, is putting a purport into the translation.
Yeah.
There's nothing about spiritual world in the verse.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that's Baladev Vidyabhushan's take on it. Yeah. Probably didn't make that up himself. Yes.
But you say that some of the devotees don't accept the understanding of jivas as a category can be fall in the category of fallible from the spiritual world. If you don't accept that,
what the devotees object about is to say that even a liberated jiva is still fallible. A liberated jiva, is gone. Has become an associate of the Lord. Why do I say that they could still fall down? Mm. If they're liberated, they shouldn't fall down. So why do we say they can't fall down?
But then everybody has fallen from the spiritual world at one point of time.
But there are devotees who don't accept that. They object that anybody can fall down. Nobody can fall down from the spiritual world. What is the opinion of some of our own devotees?
But they are in the category of deviant, like almost we spam them.
Well, yeah, but still there's some, yeah, but maybe that's not completely settled yet. I mean, there's still some reputable devotees who are holding to that opinion. That we weren't with Krishna, we were somewhere else. I don't think we can just, excommunicate them all, because some of our senior members are holding that opinion.
Prabhupada, the GBC book, they published our position.
Yeah, but maybe that GBC book was a little too one-sided. I completely agree with that. I wrote one of the chapters in that book. Uh-huh. But I see that some devotees are still not convinced. what can I do?
Okay, considering that we agree with that,
yeah.
Then we can...
Well, I don't agree with it, but I wouldn't demonize it. Yeah.
I mean, considering that we agree that everybody fall from the spiritual world.
Okay, consider, yeah, and I'm ready to agree with that.
Yeah, and so how can we say no to the point that jivas are fallible, in the category of fallible, because that's what had happened before. So.
Yeah, well, because there are some jivas who never fall down. Everyone who's here has fallen down, except for the avatars, and you know the eternal associates are on a mission. But not everybody has come to this world. They're living entities who never came to the material world. What about them? Why call them fallible?
Okay.
Eternal associates of the Lord who never fell down and never will. But I'm saying they could, and that. Some devotees don't agree with that. They don't like that, hear that. Why say they could fall down if they never did and never will?
The eternal associates?
Yeah, the Lord. There are many devotees in Vaikuntha who never fell down and probably never will. Right?
Yeah.
Only a small fraction of the living entities from Vaikuntha have fallen into the material world. Very small fraction. All the rest of them, why do we call them fallible? But I'm just standing by the definition that the jiva is tattasta, and that's what tattasta means.
I mean, the jivas can we also be called as eternal associate in the spiritual world?
I'm sorry?
The jivas can also be called as eternal associates in the spiritual world?
Why not? You have a question about the jivas to be eternal associates of the Lord in the spiritual world?
Yeah, I thought that...
Why not? There are many. Aren't Garuda and Hanuman jivas? Isn't Narada Muni a jiva?
Okay.
The Lord's closest associates, some of them are jivas. He has nothing against jivas, some of his closest associates are jivas.
Some, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur category says, there are eternally liberated souls, and they are liberated souls who are bound, then become liberated, and those who are bound, Baddhas, Muktas, and like that. So,
I think we're... This is important. I think we should save this for tomorrow.
Okay.
Can we start tomorrow with this discussion?
Okay.
But we're already 10 minutes over time, and I think this is going to go on, because you're getting into a complicated discussion. So why don't we just postpone it to tomorrow?
Thank you.
Let's Sarvigaya ask us one question, because he wants to ask it.
Just another question, is a comment. I remember we studied in the previous part of Bhagavata Sandarbha this section about Vaikuntha. And then one of the reasons, there were few lakshanas or qualities of Vaikuntha, and one of them was that nobody fell down from Vaikuntha. And then, maybe you remember, we studied this portion, and it was said...
That's Anuchet 62.
So, something like this, 62 or
63.
63, yeah, in this area. So it was said that, actually, Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī, he doesn't say that they don't fall down. He just said that there are no external reasons for them to fall down, because Vaikuntha atmosphere is made in such a way that they don't have to fall down. Nobody can force them to,
But you're quoting me. I don't know if I should be quoted as authority. You're quoting my commentary. We better check that and make sure that I didn't say something unjustified.
That's in the text.
Yeah.
That's in the text itself. And then it was said, potentially, if a living entity wants to fall down from a Vaikuntha, he can do it, potentially. But there is no external reason for him to fall down.
Okay, but I wrote that just to make a stand, but there are devotees who won't agree with that. That a liberated jiva can fall down. They'll argue, no, he can't fall down. Mm-hmm. Nobody falls down from Vaikuntha. Mm-hmm. Not even a leaves fall.
Like in this verse, it said, "Kutastho akshara uchete." Those who are in this proper consciousness, who don't want to fall down, they will never fall down. But
yes.
if they want to, they can do it.
Yeah. Well, those who are in the center, the kutastas are akshara. What if you walk away from the center? But if you get off center, then you become infallible. Become fallible. Anyway, we'll discuss this tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.